A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete.
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Comedians at Law podcast. This week, we have me, Matt Ritter, hosting along with Alex Barnett.
Hello.
Hey, this is an unusual combo. You and I somehow don't often end up together.
No, that's true. I think they're trying to avoid the greatness that is the two of us together.
Yeah, we got too many complaints that it was too good.
Too awesome.
It's like in White Man Can't Jump when Wesley Snipes starts screaming, too easy. No.
Right.
It's too easy.
Exactly.
Actually,
exactly.
That wasn't Wesley Snipes. That was one of the other basketball players. But you get the point.
I do get the point. And I think that the fact of the matter is they've just been trying to avoid us being together because, frankly, Kevin's nervous.
Yeah, it's too easy. I mean, you know, it's just too easy for the two of us. We've got too much synchronicity.
Exactly.
So we, you know, why don't we get some exciting news out of the way. We have some exciting news to share. We just started an affiliation with a really cool site, a really cool company.
Yeah. We actually have two, but the first one you're talking about, I think, is Rocket Lawyer, which is very cool. They do a lot of online services, like for people who are not lawyers, like, you know, form wills and other forms, and some. They also connect lawyers to lay people who need attorneys at less than premium prices, and they're growing by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, they're putting big law out of business.
I think they might be. And so actually the guy from Rocket Lawyer came to see us perform in San Francisco and he really liked our stuff. So they've got us on board now as an affiliate and a partner, and we're going to be doing some blogging for them and maybe some other stuff down the road too, like maybe some live shows or some online video performances for them as well.
He literally came up to us at the show and he said, "Hey kid, I'm going to make you a star."
That's right. And Matt Ritter's ears were burning because Hollywood's always looking for a deal.
That's right. I also like the idea of being paired with somebody named Rocket Lawyer. Come on.
Yeah. No, it's true.
I mean, that's about as cool as it gets in the law realm, you know?
Right. We're practically the astronauts of online.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's a group called, you know, Drug Dealing Lawyers, that would be my only other preference.
That's right. Either that or like, well, we'll get to that in a second. The other big news we have is that we paired up with the Gotham Comedy Foundation, which is based out of New York, and that's really exciting. The head of the group is a guy named Bill Drews, who is a leukemia survivor, started this group to provide humor therapy for people like himself who are suffering, you know, serious illnesses. He benefited from it, and he's looking to bring it to other people. So we're going to be doing a monthly show at Gotham Comedy Club in New York to raise money for the group, and it's really exciting because Bill's an attorney and he knows a lot of attorneys who he thinks want to come to our shows.
Yeah, no, listen, we're blowing up. And I also like doing charity. That's a nice little benefit.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, obviously, it's a good cause. And, you know, generally speaking, we're pretty funny. We had our first show, sort of a trial run, April 26th. It wasn't a formal fundraiser for the group, but Bill was there. He really liked what he saw. And we're going to get the first one up and running in June 21st. So the link is actually live on the Gotham Comedy Club website. So if people want to buy tickets now, they can.
Yeah, go buy some tickets. You're doing a good deed. The money's not going into our pockets. It's, you know, this is a charity benefit.
No, absolutely. It's 100% charity. So people should go buy tickets. But we'll be promoting this down the road as well each week on the podcast and on the website and Facebook, etc.
I find that I enjoy doing charity, but I don't you know, maybe this is a bad thing to say, but I don't take the initiative often enough to do it.
Yeah, I would say I don't either, generally speaking. I'm surprised to hear that you're a charitable kind of guy. Frankly, I think, you know, you strike me as very Hollywood. But I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear it. You've changed my mind about you in a matter of seconds.
Yes, that's what I want everybody on this podcast thinking. Hey, he's not so bad.
Right.
He likes doing charity if somebody else puts in the work to set it up.
Right. He's not as narrow and shallow and narcissistic as he appears.
Yeah. What else? Oh, so those are the two big things, I think. That was pretty much the – we're still waiting. We have another bigger announcement that I've been dying, but we're going to hold back on that until it's
Yeah, let's not jinx it. I think we're at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
So let's just wait till we put the ball across.
You don't want to be that guy, Leon Lett. Remember that guy?
Yes.
if for those of our listeners who don't remember, I think it was Super Bowl, like it was 15 years ago, and he was on the Cowboys Bills. They won the Super Bowl like 52-17, but a lot of gamblers were upset because he killed the the spread or something with his he dropped the ball. Don Beebe knocked it out of his hands at the 1 yard line.
Yeah, that's right. So let's not do it, Leon Lett. Let's just hold on to the ball tightly. Let's do the blocking and tackling, and let's get the ball into the goal line. Go.
Since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
I think maybe for starters, I thought this was interesting. You know, Monster Energy drink. You know, it's basically the liquid crack. Well,
yes.
They are suing San Francisco city attorney over this energy drinks probe. Basically what happened was the San Francisco attorney, they don't like these energy drinks being promoted towards kids, towards minors. And so they went in and they did a probe and they want them now to change their marketing. And I think even go so far as to change some of the ingredients.
Wow, so this is like taking a page out of Mayor Bloomberg's playbook in New York City, where they're just going to, like, it's all about free market, except when the mayor doesn't like something, in which case the government can meddle in anything it wants to.
Yeah, I like Bloomberg, but I'm not a fan of people, one guy basically stepping up and saying, hey, you can or can't eat this or drink this.
Well, so what's the problem with these kids drinking them? Like, the consequence is total awesomeness or something? Like, what happens to these kids?
Well, you have a kid, right? I mean, and he's an infant, right? I think it's safe to say you don't feed him caffeine, right?
No, but he's not even 2 years old. I mean, of course not. But right. I think we're talking about kids who are like in their teens, right? Who are these drinks?
Yeah.
I assume.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, when I was, it's weird, right? I think it's different now. When I was 11, I thought coffee was disgusting. Now I see kids ordering lattes, double shot, soy lattes at Starbucks at 11 years old.
Have you ever had one of these Monster Energy drinks?
I've had Red Bull.
Right.
But I think this is even stronger.
Do you like Red Bull?
It's horrible. It's one of the worst. Not only is it one of the worst tasting drinks, I think, it's one of the worst feelings in the world. Your heart starts racing. I don't see why anyone would really want that.
But do you think these kids are actually drinking it like doing like a Red Bull and vodka, so they're doing a Monster caffeine?
Absolutely. That's the few times that I've ever done it is Red Bull vodka, and it really amps you up. And then you end up going out and like punching a car window because you think you're the Terminator. And then you spend the night at Cedars-Sinai's hospital in La Cienega.
Are you speaking from experience?
No, I'm just saying hypothetically.
hypothetically, in fact. Yeah. Right, so do you know anybody who drinks these Monster beverages?
I have a few friends that literally before they go out, that's sort of their like pregame upper. I think it's like, come on, man, just admit that you want to do hard drugs. Don't just be a middle ground there. Just go do illegal drugs.
That's right. Now you're a former big law lawyer, with a very top notch premium legal education, legal degree from Penn Law. What do you think about the legal underpinnings of this? I mean, what do you think about the constitutional argument that the company's making that this is an infringement of their constitutional rights?
Well, I'll tell you something. I think this happened with Coca-Cola. I mean, way back when, right? I mean, is this a myth? The rumor has it that they actually had cocaine in their original formula.
That is true. I was there when they actually discovered or they invented Coca-Cola. That's how old I am.
Well, I'll say this about the whole argument. It's not universal that a government agency doesn't have the right to affect what's in our foods and drinks. It's not. They do it all the time.
Okay, well, that's true.
You know, the FDA, I mean, it's different because this isn't the FDA, right? I mean, this is a city attorney.
Right, right. But what the company's coming back and saying, look, how, you know, what you're doing violates our First Amendment rights of free speech.
Yeah. I mean, can you mark, well, here's the thing, right? To adults, yes. But to children, shouldn't there be a higher level of you know, sort of scrutiny on that?
Well, look, as a parent, I would say yes. I would say that, like, you shouldn't be allowed to market to children, period.
Right. I mean, because who's harmed by that, right? I mean, you know, other than their bottom line, what individual right is harmed by us being more cognizant and a little bit more restrictive on how you market to children?
None. I mean, that's always the argument, right, that the government takes, like whether they're regulating Joe Camel, you know, with the cigarettes or with cereals now where they're going after sugary cereals. They're saying, like, you can't put, like, fancy cartoon characters on a cereal box or McDonald's with the marketing. It's the same argument over and over and over again. As a parent with a young child, I don't want him to even see any kind of commercials till he's 20.
Yeah. And my mother used to never let me eat sugar cereals. Man, I was missing out. Once I started seeing those commercials for those Cinnamon Toast Crunch guys, man, those guys look like they're having a good time.
I feel like you've made up for lost time by eating a lot of sugary cereal.
Oh, absolutely. But now I'm not allowed to anymore. My girlfriend doesn't let me have any of that stuff. So I had a good run in my teens and 20s.
Yeah? Does she let you drink stuff like Monster or Red Bull? Or
No. Never.
So just to put the cap on this, if you're looking at this as an objective arbiter of this, how do you come down on this case?
I come down in that I don't think a city attorney should have the right to do this because I think he's overstepping. But I think that if the FDA wants to take action, I sort of fall along that lines. I don't like these unilateral one-man band efforts. You know, I don't know what this guy's agenda is.
Well, he's probably going to be running for mayor at some point. Yeah.
Right. I mean, so to me, that bothers me. You know, it's and I'm not a parent, so I understand the concern. But, you know, I mean, you're going to reformulate it. Why? Is there actually any proof that it's dangerous?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but
other than to women who go out with fraternity guys, I mean.
Right, exactly. I think that's the biggest danger, is that it's equivalent to a roofie in a can.
Yeah. Yeah. I think these drinks taste horrible, so I really don't understand how people drink them.
Right. No, I don't either. I don't either. Besides which, I have irregular heartbeat issues. I can't drink stuff like this.
I just don't like that feeling. It's scary. You know, you get to a certain age, you're like, that's – when you're a teenager, you don't go, shit, that's my heartbeat, you know?
No, right.
Now, every little thing that's off key on the heart, you're like, wait, that's my heartbeat.
Right. No, absolutely. Believe me.
You don't ever want to say that. You never want to think about your heartbeat at this point, you know?
No, your heart is definitely one of those things like a clock or the IRS. You just want it to be there, never worry.
You never want to hear it. You never want to see it. It's just there, doing its job.
Exactly.
Yeah. Should we move on to the next story?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to? Well, you pick. You pick which one you want to talk about.
Well, I feel like the Boston bomber one has been talked about ad nauseum at this point. Basically, what happened recently is a judge finally stepped in and Mirandized this kid. So what has been happening is there's a so-called public safety exception under which
let's go back and tell people for the two people who've never watched a cop show on television, we should tell them what the Miranda rights are.
You have the right to you want to say it? You want to do it? Can you do it?
I don't think I can do it from memory, but if you can, go for it.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney. If you don't know of an attorney, we'll appoint one for you. Right? Something like that. That was pretty good.
Non-criminal.
You're breaking up on me a little bit. Hello?
Attorney.
You broke up on me there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Under constitutional law, under yeah, I'm here, Matt.
You broke up on me for the
No,
last
that's
30
you.
Seconds.
That's you. You're having trouble. I'm fine. I can hear you. Okay, well, I'm here. I can hear you fine.
Okay, we'll start over from that Miranda stuff.
Okay. So after having recited them rights, for those who don't know, there is a Supreme Court case. I believe it's Miranda versus Arizona, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
in which the Supreme Court ruled that before, you know, that you had to apprise somebody of their rights to counsel and that they had the right to remain silent. And since then, it's been, you know, been made famous in every single TV cop show. And when they arrested this guy, is it Jokhar Tsarnaev? They didn't.
Very nice pronunciation there.
I watched a lot of MSNBC coverage of this. So they didn't at first apprise him of his Miranda rights because there is, as you said, this public safety exception, and that's where you left off. So you're explaining to everyone.
Well, what basically, that, what this is. I mean, I think this has been in the past, you know, probably post 9/11. It might have been before then. I'll have to look it up. But they've been carving out this so-called public safety exception, whereby if a terrorist or somebody, you know, gets arrested right after they've done something, the idea is if there's still an imminent threat, then we're not going to Mirandize him because we don't want him to clam up. But anything he says in that time period can't be used against him in court.
Right. So there's this double-edged sword. So now, at first, my understanding is they didn't give Jokhar Tsarnaev his Miranda rights, but they were still interrogating him once he woke up. After he was arrested and taken to the hospital, he was, I guess, unconscious. But when he woke up, the FBI went in and interrogated him, and he was giving information. But now the judge has stepped in and said, no, look, you've got to give this guy his Miranda rights, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And so, look, there's so many issues with this, right? One is that he's an American citizen.
Yes.
And, you know, whether you want to call him a terrorist, yeah, I think he is a terrorist. But that the definition of the word terrorist is just very vague to me at this point in time in the world. He's not part of any it seems now from the facts that he may not even have been part of any sort of group. I've been hearing this really scary term lately called self-radicalized.
Yeah, well, that seems to be the case. I mean, in a lot of ways, he's really no different than Timothy McVeigh from the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, except for the fact that he's Muslim, I guess, you know, that's where the difference that people are pointing to. But essentially, he's a U.S. citizen and he, you know, perpetrated an attack. It seems to be that it was sort of not part of a larger plan, but we don't know that for sure, right? We never know that for sure. That's the issue. We never know for sure whether there's going to be a further threat. I think this whole idea of public safety exception is kind of BS because we'll never truly know.
Right. So here's the question. Do you, Matt Ritter, Penn Law grad, fancy legal education, do you think this guy should have been given his Miranda rights from the outset?
It's a very, very tough one. You know, I don't want to say put a gun to my head because it's – Well,
let me step back and give you an easier, more philosophical question. Do you think people should get Miranda rights when they're playing Monopoly and they get sent to jail?
Yes.
So, okay. So let's start with that. You believe that in Monopoly, you get a go to jail directly, do not pass go, you get Miranda rights.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's fast forward to Jokhar. Why is this any different? He's going straight to jail, probably.
Right. The difference is, I think part of the reason that we all, you know, we never think about why we have a government and why we have the police and why we have, you know, legal authority. It really all boils down to we all agree to give up certain rights to have order in our society and to feel safe.
Yes. Now, listen, as a commuter, a New York City commuter who rides the subway every single day, I would gladly give up privacy rights if the police would stop and frisk all these yo-yos who bring these giant knapsacks on the subway who they get in the way.
Right.
I also think they should detain anybody who leans against the pole and doesn't hold it with their hand because they're taking up extra space.
And they also end up bumping into people all over the subway when
they do.
That.
They're the ones, by the way, who do the unwanted touching of the women's bottoms. So,
yeah, I'm not just of women. I don't really enjoy having my bottom touched on the subway either.
Right, right. Well, who does, frankly? Because on the subway, it could be someone with a dirty hand. They don't use Purell. It's disgusting. So, I mean, I'm of the camp that now, I may regret saying this, but I believe that we should allow a certain amount of infringement of our rights.
I'm with you because you know what? I want to stay alive.
Right. Like I think we should definitely infringe on Second Amendment rights. I think they should infringe away on the Second Amendment.
I couldn't agree. I think we're both in the same camp on that. But I'm of the mindset that I want to live as long as possible. That's my number one priority. I want to stay alive. I want my family to stay alive.
Right.
That means, you know, cracking down on morons and terrorists and psychopaths. Yeah, I'm willing to give that up. I'm a law-abiding citizen for the most part.
Right. Now, the only reason I would say that they should give Jokhar Tsarnaev as Miranda writes, is because the worst case scenario would be somehow this guy gets off free on a technicality, right? You know, that would be the worst.
Yeah, and that's not so bad compared to the worst of not getting all the info out of him.
Right. So I think they should err on the side of caution here, because the most important thing is they get a conviction. That's what I think. Having just said I think we should infringe on people's rights, I do think here maybe they should bend over backwards a little bit, because they need this conviction. They need this guy to go to jail.
That's more important than let's say there was a potential chance that they could glean some information off this guy, though, and it meant him getting off.
Well, I think once they get him to jail, they should put him in a cell with somebody who doesn't like, you know, foreigners.
Yeah. I think they should put him in jail with the guy. If you watch the Shawshank Redemption, you remember the Queens?
Right.
I think they would like Tsarnaev. He's pretty cute.
Right. Put him in Oz, right? Put him in Oz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, here's a question before we exit this story. You're from Hollywood. You've got your ear to the ground. You've got your finger on the pulse of the Hollywood machine. How soon till they make the movie of this thing?
Oh, you know, I already heard of a couple of agents outside of coffee shops saying that, you know, they were trying to figure out who the lead would be. I heard them talking about Ed Norton to play Jokar, and then having, you know, Sean Connery play his brother.
Oh, my God. Even though, oh God, Sean Connery's like 1,000 years old.
Yeah, but he still thinks he can play younger. You know, these older action stars.
Right, just put a toupee on him, he'll get right in there.
Yeah, no, I heard actually they're trying to do it, the story, but make it with women. It's going to be Angelina Jolie playing the older sister and Emma Watson playing Jokar Tsarnaev.
And it's going to be produced by Judd Apatow, because it's going to be a bromance, right?
Yes, yes.
All right.
A chickmance. All right, let's move on. Let's move on. Yeah. I don't want to talk about these monsters anymore.
All right, well, let's go to the third story, which I think is the most interesting, clearly, of the three.
Yeah. So, right? This is amazing. Kobe Bryant, we all know, is not a good guy. He's just proven time and time again. He's just not a good guy. He's a great basketball player, but he's not a good human being. He's just – none of his teammates like him. Nobody that's ever had human interaction with him really likes him. And I think we'd probably have to add to that list his own mother.
Right.
Because we just found out that his mother, her name's Pamela, Pamela Bryant, she just made a deal with Golden Auctions to sell – a ton of his basketball memorabilia, his high school jersey, game balls, shorts, trophies, letters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She got a deal for $450,000 to sell all of his stuff.
Sounds low, actually.
Well, I don't know if it was all of his stuff or some of his stuff. I mean, obviously it's everything that she has in her house. Apparently she's planning on using this money to buy a new home. Now, okay. Obviously, if she's doing this to buy a new home, he's done something wrong here, because the guy makes $100 million.
Right. So obviously, if he's not buying her the home, which any good son would buy his mama a home.
My mom always says to me, she goes, Matt, will you do like those athletes do when you make it big? Will you buy me a house?
Right. And you told her, absolutely. As soon as I blow up, I'm going to buy you a house, and that should be right around when I start collecting Social Security.
Absolutely. I mean, even if I'm 70, I'll still try and buy her a house. The point is that's a son's duty who's successful, is to buy his mom a house.
Right. And so you're saying Kobe Bryant refuses to buy his mom a house.
He's probably bought her a few houses, but she probably wants a new, better one.
Right. So she's selling his stuff. And so he's contesting this. He's saying you can't sell my stuff.
Yeah, he's saying that he's the owner. Now, I guess that brings up an interesting property question, because we all know ownership is, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law.
That's what they say on television.
That's what they say on television. Is that how it is in real life?
I've been out of law school longer than you. I have no idea. The only thing I remember about property is the rule against perpetuities. I don't think that applies here.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what rule applies. He was a high schooler. A lot of this stuff is his high school stuff. I think the rule is anything you leave at your mom's house, she's probably going to throw out usually. He's lucky she auctioned it off.
Right. Listen, I'm with you. I think, first of all, the guy's a clown, because if you won't buy your mom a house, it stops and ends there. If you won't buy your mom a house, you're just a loser and a lowlife.
Yeah, I mean, he bought Vanessa Bryant a $4 million ring when he cheated on her. He can't buy his mom a $500,000 house.
Right. On the other hand, I do see his point. It's never fun when your mom sells away a piece of your childhood.
Can I tell you? Can I tell you a story? I feel similar to Kobe Bryant. I know what he's going through right now, and I'll tell you, I can empathize because my mother, I had a Michael Jackson jacket. Of course, you remember the red and black leather jacket.
You had one of those?
Yes, I had one of those. I wore it all the time.
Oh, my God. And, really? Did you moonwalk?
I could do a little moonwalk. I wish we were doing a video right now. And so my mother, one day I get home, and my mother, I said, where's my Michael Jackson jacket? She goes, oh, I put it in the Goodwill box. You know those big blue Goodwill boxes?
So there's a homeless man walking around with a Michael Jackson leather jacket on right now?
Well, probably. I actually had her drive me down there, and I tried to stuff myself into the Goodwill box. I got stuck like Winnie the Pooh. I couldn't get in, you know, and I said, Mom, how the heck could you possibly think it was okay to give away my Michael Jackson jacket? You know what she said?
What?
She said, because you're 30, Matt.
30? Oh, Jesus. Dude, that's – well, listen, that's a close call because I can understand your emotional attachment to the jacket. On the other hand, yeah, that's terrible. No white kid should have ever had a Michael Jackson jacket, and certainly not when he was 30.
I don't right. know, you know, it's like everybody has something from their childhood.
You got to let go. My mom gave away my members only jacket, and I you know, that was a tough day for me.
Yeah, but that's a tough day. That is a very tough day.
She didn't sell it, but she did give it away. And somehow this Kobe Bryant, Pamela Bryant thing reminds me of that scene of Meet the Fockers when they see the Hall of Fame for Gaylord Focker of all his like wrestling uniform. Yeah. I have this vision of her selling like Kobe's ninth place medal from Lower Merion High School.
Oh, come on. You think Kobe was ever ninth place in anything? No way.
No, you're probably right.
I'll tell you something, though. You know what would be amazing? You know what I think would be really amazing? Is if LeBron or somebody buys Kobe's mom a house.
Oh, my God. No, bought all his stuff and bought her a house and put the stuff back in there.
Oh, that would have been hilarious.
And LeBron's the kind of guy who would do it. I think he secretly doesn't like Kobe.
Yeah, I don't think he likes Kobe. I think he should buy Pamela Bryant a house and buy all the stuff and put all the stuff in it.
Or maybe what they should do is buy the stuff. Buy the mom a house and give the stuff to that chick in Colorado that Kobe Bryant had that sexual assault of.
That's a good idea. I think that would make everybody feel better about everything.
Oh, my God. It would be so horrendous. It would be so awful. That woman would be in therapy for the rest of her life if she isn't already going to be.
She's definitely in therapy, but that would be amazing if she's just walking around in a Kobe Bryant jersey all the time now.
Oh, my God. So sick.
Well, I think that wraps up our legal news stories. We ended on a light note.
Yes. All right. Well, let's get on to good cop, bad cop, man.
Yeah. Should we hit up the Twitter?
Yeah. Well, who's the good – usually when I'm on this show, I'm the good cop.
I'll be the bad cop.
All right. You be the bad cop. So here's the bad news. Well, here's the good news from my perspective. Though no one – did the hashtag CalPod, we did actually get a couple of tweets in the last week. So that's the good news. Now, if you choose to see that as glass half empty, that's your problem.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm starting to realize our problem. The hashtag CALPod sounds gross. I don't know. I think we need to change it maybe.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's gross. I think that
I don't like it. It doesn't have a nice ring. Maybe we should change it to something. What if we get a little buzz going, you know, like
put it in Variety magazine, get some buzz going.
Yeah, let's get a little buzz going. CAL pod. What does that even mean? It means Comedians at Law podcast people. Come on, get with the program.
First of all, let me just say, I'm not necessarily agreeing with you about CalPod. I will say this. We've gotten some steady traffic on the Twitter feed. One guy, John Stedding, who's a Marine veteran, he's been following us religiously. He's a big fan. He's a super fan now in the ranks of like Jess Dugan and Brandon from Ohio Northern.
Very nice.
Yeah. And then we've got a new woman who's been reaching out to us. Let's see here. We've got Chelsea from Happy Go Legal, who we just talked to and we interviewed. And just recently we had a new face emerge on the scene. And I'm looking up right now. Teresa Isaac wished us a happy Law Day on May 1st.
Is that a real holiday? I'm going to play bad cop and say there's no such thing as Law Day.
I'm looking it up right now. I'm looking it up because I believe in Teresa and her.
I think she was confused. She was confusing Law Day with Cinco de Mayo.
No, I found it. Lawday.org. Lawday.org, supported by the American Bar Association. Yes, this is a real thing.
What were we supposed to do for Law Day? I missed it.
I don't know. We were supposed to embrace the rule of law, which I guess living in America you generally do most days.
Yeah, actually, for once I cleaned up my dog's poop on the street, so I think I did that for Law Day.
Okay. That's good. That's so you generally don't poop or scoop.
Well, she has a really cool habit of doing it in this, like, buried garden and bushes, so it's amazing for me.
All right. Well, there you go.
She fertilizes, so it's pretty cool.
All right. Well, I'm not sure what that has to do with our Twitter feed, but the good news is we have more Twitter followers, and I think that because we're a lawyers group and Teresa went out of her way to send us a happy Law Day tweet, we should send her a shirt.
Teresa, congratulations. You're the winner.
Right. And now Teresa, if you're listening, please send us your offline, send us your info, your address info, and we'll get that to you. Well, actually, Kevin will get it to you because neither one of us knows how to mail things. And I'll send her a direct message to make sure she gets that message.
Isn't that exciting, people? All you have to do is hashtag CALpod and you win t-shirts.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So we're looking forward to Teresa being a new follower. I think that's awesome.
Very cool. You know what I'm excited about? I'm excited about this interview I'm doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about that before we sign off.
Well, have you seen the movie The Social Network?
I have. The Facebook movie, correct?
Yeah. Has anybody not seen that movie?
Probably the guys who work for Twitter.
You don't think they've seen that movie? You think they're waiting for Twitter movie?
They probably have. They're waiting for Twitter the movie. It'll be 6 seconds long.
Yeah. Can I do my Justin Timberlake impersonation?
Okay, but quick, because we got to end this thing.
Okay. You know what's cool? $1 billion.
That should be the lead into this episode.
Yeah, I like that. So that was
You should do that. You should lead this episode 33, with your Justin Timberlake.
You know what's cool? $1 billion. whatever happened to male action stars? You realize he's the biggest male action star right now.
Yeah, I know. Steve McQueen is rolling over in his grave.
Yeah. It used to be like, even Bruce Willis, it went from yippee-ki-yay, mother effer, to you know what's cool? $1 billion.
All right, listen, are we done?
Yeah, we're done.
All right, so say goodbye to everybody and let's sign off.
All right, bye everybody. We're going to do this interview now. Say goodbye, Alex.
All right, goodbye.
Bye. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Comedians at Law podcast. I am very excited. In my apartment right now, we've got a very special guest. She was a lawyer, and she successfully made the transition to actress. I don't know if any of you have seen this little movie called The Social Network. I assume at least a couple of you saw that, considering it was the biggest movie of last year or 2 years ago. We are joined by the very lovely Denise Grayson.
Hey, Matt.
So if you're wondering, you're probably IMDBing her right now. Who was she? Why don't you tell them who you were in The Social Network?
I played Gretchen, Eduardo Saverin's lawyer.
Yeah. Eduardo.
Spider-Man's lawyer.
Spider-Man's lawyer. He's very handsome.
He is. He's beautiful.
Yeah, I had a little problem with that. Does the real Eduardo Saverin look as good looking as that guy?
I think the real Eduardo Saverin looks really good to a lot of people.
Yeah, well now, but now he's living, isn't he? He moved out
in
of the U.S.
I think
yeah.
He's in Singapore. He's living very nicely.
Yeah, he's not paying taxes. He didn't want to pay any taxes on that $1 billion settlement. So I guess let's just jump into that. How did you land the role in The Social Network? I mean, what a big role.
Not the traditional way. I was at a party. And I met David Fincher's casting director, Lorraine Mayfield, at the Chateau Marmont.
Wow.
Yeah. And no clue, she started talking to me. It was a big, fancy L.A. Golden Globe event. And she asked me if I was an actress, which I always said, yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like any actress. Can you do this? Yes. I'm relatively tall. Are you 5'2"? Yes, I can cut my feet off.
Yeah, we'll do it.
So she asked me if I was an actress. And I said yes, in front of a lot of huge stars, and I kind of hid. And we just started chatting, and she gave me her business card, and she said, yeah, maybe I can help you find a commercial agent, because I didn't have a commercial agent at the time. And I stayed on her and stayed after her, and it took months and months and months and months, and I got into her office. And we just had a little friendship. She never asked for my headshot or resume. That's, you know, how we all get work. And then I got an email from her that went to my spam. And not being a lawyer anymore, I wasn't checking my mail as frequently. Now
right,
I check it every day.
Yeah, right. We used to go from checking it every 5 minutes to whenever you feel like it.
Whatever. I'm an unemployed actor.
Mm-hmm.
And it went to spam, but it was about 2 hours before I left. Really amazing.
Wow.
And she said, do you want to come in and read for a movie that I'm casting? And the role was Gretchen Turney.
Did you know anything about this movie before that?
No clue. I figured, how lucky is this? I'll get another credit. It'll be some independent movie she's casting. I knew she was a big casting director. She casts all these huge movies. I had met her for the party of Curious Case of Benjamin Button, the previous Fincher movie. And I had no clue. So I said, of course. You know, and I got the sides, and they were Sorkin sides. I don't know if everybody who's listening, I forget.
They probably, everybody who listens to our podcast knows what sides are. We've probably talked about it, but you can tell them in case anybody doesn't know. You get a couple of pages up from the script, and you'll see your character's name, and it's like a scene or two,
And that's what you audition with. So, and the sides were from Aaron Sorkin TV shows.
Uh-huh.
The West Wing and Studio 60.
Fast talking shows.
Very fast. So, good for a lawyer.
Yeah.
And I prepared them really well and worked hard because you always got to get that stuff off the page and make it real. And then I went in there and I had no clue. It was just her and I. Nobody else was there. And she said, what do you want to start with? I said, well, the character's a lawyer. Let's do CJ. Because she was the press secretary.
Right, right.
And I did it and she was so happy. It was a great scene. It was a fun scene. And she said, oh my goodness. I said, is there anything else you'd like to tell me? She's like, do you want to do it again? I said, sure. She said, David loves speed. I said, holy cow, this is a David Fincher movie. Oh my God. And so I did it again. And she said, it's really, you're perfect for this part. Still had no idea what it was. 3 days later, I got a phone call. She said, David saw the tapes. He saw everybody and he loved you. And he, at that point, he didn't know I was a lawyer. And they brought me back in again. And it's a long Hollywood story, but it took 4 months. It would take way too long to tell you the ups and downs of this.
Wow.
But
so when you found out, I mean, was it like David? Did you actually go in front of David or Aaron or any of those
guys? The funniest thing for me was it was a couple of years into Entourage, and I didn't get into it at the beginning, but I started watching it, and it was Aaron Sorkin's episode on Entourage.
Yeah, very funny.
So it was that Sunday, and I must have gone in a few days later, and so my second audition, I had about 4 tests, or at least, and they kept dropping the ball for like a month or two in the middle, and every day I was thinking about it, because I knew something like this might, I didn't even know the breadth of it, but I knew it would change things for me a little bit.
Yeah. And game changer, they call those.
Yeah. Even if it was one scene in a David Fincher movie. So, little did I know when I got there, I'd be number 4 on the cast list.
Unbelievable, huh?
It really was.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So, where were we?
Oh, we were just talking about how that came
to so the second time I walked in, she called me back and she gave me 3 scenes from what was to be The Social Network. In the interim, I got on the internet, I did all my research. The Accidental Billionaires was a book that I had heard about but never read. I read the book. And like a lawyer, I did all my research. I prepared like I'd be prepping for the biggest case of my life. And I went in there 2-3 days later, and who stands up and shakes my hand? Denise, hi, it's Aaron Sorkin. Big, big fan of yours. And I start laughing.
That was a good Aaron Sorkin, by the way.
And I'm laughing. I'm thinking he's joking, And of course he was joking. But no, he had seen the tapes and he liked it too. Right. So he was there. And I remember him saying, I remember everything about this. I don't know if you guys want to hear.
Yes.
I'm talking with the casting director. And I guess we had about 10 or 15 minutes before we got started. And he's a very funny man, Aaron. But the casting director and I in the interim had taken a hike together. Not discussing business at all, because I really liked her, and she's a very nice woman, and he heard about hiking, and he said, if there are bagels on top of the mountain, maybe I'll go, and you can eat breakfast. So then I was very loose and comfortable, and he said, are you ready? I said, yeah. He said, do you mind if I read with you? I'm like, knock yourself out. So here I am in a room reading sides with Aaron Sorkin of words that he wrote, and wonderful.
Yeah. Is he, he just seems so, like, he's like this frantic genius. Is he, like, frantic, or is he...
No, like, he's not frantic. He is absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
He is a genius.
Yeah.
And he speaks quickly because my guess is his brain is just full mile and a minute. Fluttered. And he's a lovely gentleman, and he's very gracious to actors.
Yeah.
I remember my first day on set, he came over and he whispered in my ear and he said, "That was just beautiful, Denise. Thank you." And you know what that's like for someone to give you that.
That's awesome.
He's a number one in my book.
Yeah. And what's David Fincher like? I don't think the public knows much about, other than his work as a person or as somebody to work with.
He's very professional, very exact. You can tell it by his work. I had nothing also but positive. I wish I could tell you some really nasty
stuff. No, they don't have to be nasty.
You know what was very nice of him, actually? Here's another nice thing somebody did. And it was fun for me because here I am on this, and it felt like I've done independent pictures. It felt as big as this was. I don't think anybody realized what it would become.
Yeah.
And it felt very small and intimate, like an independent picture.
Yeah.
But you know, everybody in every department is at the top of their game with Academy Award nominations and wins. So, and David is known for doing a lot of takes. And I don't know if anybody here, if you remember, there were, I think, 99 takes on that first scene in the movie. With
him and the
Jesse and Rooney. And the
Rooney, wow.
Yeah.
99 takes.
99 takes.
Well, they got it right. I mean, that opening scene, just from the beginning, I think there's a thing where you know right away that you're seeing a monumentally good movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think, you know, you can just turn it on, or you can get in the theater and you sit down and there's something, you know, and it's like, if it took 99, then it was worth every one of them, because right when you sit in the theater and right when that movie starts, you're in it all the way.
I think I'm a little partial to it, but I really think this movie was very different in the beginning of a different way of watching movies.
And yeah.
Very different kind of movie making.
Yeah.
But David, he came in at the end of my first day, and he put his arm around me, and he's not the most demonstrative guy in the world, from what I've observed. And he just said, "Don't worry, don't worry." He knew it was my first really big picture. I do it to everybody. Because I'm used to going in and you got to get it done on the first take. You're reusing the paper and saving your paper cup on a set.
Yeah.
You know? Don't get another water bottle. Right, put your name on the bottle of water.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was kind.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, it's, I think it's, you know, to me, it's like the best movie that I can remember of recent, you know, I guess of the 2010, you know, this decade. To me, that's the movie of the day. And almost sort of the movie of this time period, you know, represents so much of the era that we live in.
It really does. And I think it'll go down in time as people will watch this and know exactly what happened at exactly what time of the century.
What is, I just curious, you know, you probably gained a lot of insight into the actual story from doing this movie. What is your take on, you know, what actually went down? Do you think Zuckerberg is, you know, an intellectual property thief? What are your thoughts?
You and I could debate the legalities of it, but in actuality, I mean, you're a really smart young guy. Picture so many years earlier, these kids were kids.
Yeah.
They were kids.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, it's true, right? I mean, you know, he was 18 years old at the time. But, you know, it is one of those things. It's like,
I think it can still be debated.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really boring if we sat here and talked
about realities.
But I think they're, you know, like there's always two sides. I think it's settled for what it was supposed to be at that time.
Yeah. I just meant sort of, I guess also in sense of like Zuckerberg, the guy. Did you get a sense of, like, from, you know, I guess they got all this info from the book that they did and interviews, I mean.
Yeah, I think I met Mark Zuckerberg many years ago, way before this. At
really?
Some New York event or something. But I don't know him. I can't comment on him. I don't know him.
Yeah, Jesse Eisenberg is really incredible.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, that kid's a real talent.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. So let's rewind, because we just started with Closer to the Present Day, but you were on that lawyer path somewhere along the lines. You jumped off. Where did you go to law school?
University of Miami in Florida.
Oh, wow. Did you work in Florida at all?
I worked my last year of law school. They have an integration rule, so you can get certified. So I worked as a state attorney the last year.
Did you know back then that you wanted to be an actress?
No. No. I always had a creative side to me, and I had the lead in school plays. I was painfully shy as a kid, but I think a lot of actors and comics are the same way. But I never thought I'd have a career at it. It wasn't until after I graduated law school and started working on Wall Street that I started to take acting classes.
Mm. You worked on Wall Street as well, huh? What were you doing on Wall Street?
I was an IP lawyer.
Yeah.
Predominantly technology at the beginning of the internet, and I worked in-house at some of the large investment banks.
Yeah.
And then as I was studying, and when I did know I wanted to go on this course, I kind of developed my own practice.
Yeah. So did you just start taking acting classes in the city?
I did HB Studio.
Oh, nice. In the West Village over there.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your first...
It was the Meatpacking District.
Yeah, no, I lived on Washington, Horatio in Washington.
Right around the corner.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would sneak out of my office, and, I mean, you've got a really nice laptop here, but I had the big computer and everything on a Wall Street office, and I'd leave my computer on and close my door so it looked like I was still busy at 10 of 5 and run to acting class.
Yeah, no, it sounds like my story with the comedy, you know, I'd sneak out to do the shows. So what was the first sort of moment where you're like, I can do this, or did you land a small role in something, or
I would do plays. There was a movie that I did. I stopped working full time for a whole year just to work on the craft and do whatever I could. And I did a film that won the jury prize. Dave Silver, a wonderful filmmaker. His short film won in 2002 at Sundance, and I did that. And it seemed really easy. And then I went on and I did his feature film. And just before that, my first job, I was a principal in a feature, and I worked for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I had stopped working full time. And that was a couple of years before that. And I said, oh, this is easy.
Right. You land that first one.
Little did I know. I got right into SAG, but you don't realize that there are millions of actors with three jobs.
Yeah, people hate hearing stories like that.
Well, now everybody thinks, you know, I'm this wonder kid, and I'm far from a kid, as we all know. But it's just like, oh, she went to Hollywood, and she got in the Social Network. But it's a dozen years before that.
I find it amazing that you'll hear things like, he just sort of came out of nowhere, when all of us who work know that that's universally, or 99.9% of the time, it's not true. They have been working under the radar constantly that entire time. When you say, where did that person come from? They came from busting their hump for 10 years usually before anybody sort of pops up on the proverbial radar screen, I think.
Well, yeah. The overnight success is 10 years, and I think it's 15.
Yeah. No, I do. I think
if at all. But yeah, just like comics, you look everywhere to do your material and stand up and work, and actors do the same thing. You do every independent picture. You just stay busy.
Yeah, and you're in the comedy realm too, right? I mean, you do some comedy. Do you coach? Is that right? You do some coaching?
Yes, I do.
So tell us about that. I think that's really cool, especially for, I'm sure there are, we always get requests, actually. It's really funny. We always get requests from lawyers. They go, I want to join your group. I'm like, oh, really? Is that it? You just want to join our already successful group that we built up?
But I've worked with a couple of lawyers, stand-up comics.
Well, I'm going to say, if you want to join our group, then first maybe you should work with Denise, and then come to us and say, oh, we've worked with Denise, or we've done some training, and we've put in the work.
No, well, thanks for that plug. Thanks for that plug, Matt. But no, it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah.
A lot of comics who start, they don't really have acting a background, a comfort within themselves. And that's interesting, too. You can be awkward and uncomfortable. You just have to be strong in whatever you are.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting, actually, sort of an East Coast versus West Coast comedy perspective. I think a lot of the comedians that I see here have that acting background. Mm-hmm. So a lot of their stage work is a little bit more polished, I guess, in that sense.
Most of my comedy coaching is on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I teach a lot of the young up-and-comers at the comic strip, and I work with some seasoned people also.
Yeah.
But I do it in New York and in L.A., and sometimes in between.
So do you find that they need more help with sort of their stage presence and that sort of thing?
Yeah, And I work with lawyers also.
Yeah.
And professional people. I've worked with a congressperson.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's interesting. Was it because he wanted to transition into acting or for public speaking?
Public speaking.
Okay, I was going to say, that'd be funny if somebody gave up their job as a senator. Well, Fred Thompson has been acting, though.
Exactly.
I mean, he's got more credits than Bill's past, I think, that guy.
I wouldn't mind having his resume.
Yeah, no, he's got a... I liked him... Was he in that movie, The Distinguished Gentleman? No. Was he in that one? You ever see that one with Eddie Murphy where he plays the...
I don't remember. I remember he plays him from Law & Order.
Yeah. You were saying that we both have a favorite bagel place out here, that you saw Larry King in some of those older Jewish comics.
Last week, all those old guys, somebody took me in there, and they were all sitting there from the old Friars Club in the corner eating bagels and coffee. And I'm from Brooklyn, so someone knew me there and said, oh, you have to meet these people. And there were pictures all over of just where I grew up.
Yeah.
Coney Island, Brighton Beach.
It's a really cool spot. If you're ever in L.A., you should check out Brooklyn Water Bagel. Larry King owns it. So you sat down with the old...
I sat down and I heard... And the friend who brought me in there is an old-time manager. And he said, she's a lawyer. She was a lawyer. She's an actress. And I got every bad lawyer joke.
But they know him. I mean, those guys know jokes. I feel like people these days, like, they don't even know a good joke. You know, like a good lawyer. I don't even know.
But they even took bad ones and made them good. Why do we bury lawyers face down so they know where they're going? I mean, one. But they were funny when they say that.
Yeah, and they can rattle them off. Those guys can rattle off, like, 100 good jokes. Let's see if we can rattle off a few. A few good lawyer jokes. Like, do you know any good lawyer jokes?
All right, let's try.
Let's try it. I'll start. Do you know how to save a drowning lawyer?
No.
Take your foot off his head.
What's the difference between an accountant and a lawyer?
I don't know.
Accountants know they're boring.
Oh, that is a good one. What do you call 5,000 dead lawyers at the bottom of an ocean?
You don't want me to give you the answer.
A good start.
What's the difference between a lawyer and a prostitute? Prostitute will stop screwing you once you're dead.
That is true. I know this. I don't know this from experience. What do you got?
Okay, here's one. What's the difference between a lawyer and God?
I don't know.
God doesn't think he's a lawyer.
I like that one. What do you call a smiling, sober, courteous person at a bar association convention? The caterer.
I like that. All right. Okay. Here's a story. A young woman goes to see a lawyer, small matter. After a consultation, he tells her the bill's $100. She gives him a crisp, sharp $100 bill. She leaves. So he sits back, and you know, this is the guy in a storefront. He gives the bill a flick, and he notices that it was new, and there are two of them there. So now he's got the age-old ethical dilemma. Should he keep it for himself or split it with his partner?
Yep, that's our profession, folks.
I don't agree with these. That's
no,
why.
No, we love lawyers on this podcast, but we thought we would tell a couple of good lawyer jokes in honor of the old Larry King and his cronies that we met. You were telling me a good story. I thought that would be a really cool story to sort of wrap up the podcast on. About on The Social Network during the deposition scene.
Oh, yeah. So it was my first... It was also, I think, my first or second day on set. And they were setting up the cameras. And I heard David outside shouting, nobody knew where to put the camera. Like, where it would go in the room. And I heard David shout out. And then everybody knew I was a lawyer after that. Ask Denise! So it made me feel nice.
Yeah, I mean, you should have gotten paid also as a member
of... consultant.
Yeah, as a legal consultant. And by the way, we actually met at a premiere of an event, very Hollywood, right? It's even though neither of us work as lawyers now, anytime anybody hears, oh, you were a lawyer, they automatically like want to introduce you to somebody else who was a lawyer. So it worked out really well. Before we let you go, I wanted to know what you're up to next. What's next for you?
Like every actor, looking for my next job.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of independent pictures now that are about to come out. One is doing the festival circuit. Actually, one of the indie pictures that I'm doing is opening. Well, it opened in a few festivals, but it is going to be the Brooklyn International Film Festival.
Very cool.
So my
Your
friends
hometown.
Back home. If I'm not working, which I'm hoping, because there's something in the mix, but if I'm not, I'm going to go there and say hi.
Nice. When is that?
That is the end of March into the beginning. I think the festival's the 31st of May till first, second week of June.
Very cool. Yeah, it's always good to go back home with something exciting.
A couple other things. I worked on a music video, a couple of movies. There's one now I'm kind of hoping on.
All right. Well,
I signed an NDA. I don't usually do that, but I signed an NDA.
We'll keep our fingers crossed for you. And, you know, all those lawyers out there that are listening and harass us via email saying you want to join our group because you think you have the comedy chops, I suggest reaching out to Denise first, then she'll give you a little coaching, and then come to us. If you come to us saying, I've worked with Denise, you're far more likely to get a response from us.
Well, from my colleagues, you're welcome to ask me a question anytime, anyway.
Yeah, so, well, thank you so much for doing this, Denise. Really enjoyed it.
It was great.